Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales, this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. What follows is a speech by M.K. Lords, our frequent co-host, called For a New Empowerment, Protecting Yourself from Abusive Subcultures. She gave the speech at Liberty Fest New York City. It was one of the most brave and courageous speeches I've ever seen. She breaks down how cults and cult-like organizations use the same tactics as abusive partners to draw on adherents. Unfortunately, no group, whether anarchist or political, is immune from being swept up. It doesn't have to be that way, and you can empower yourself against such techniques. Of course, you can find everything at libertarian-atheist.com. It's also the first year anniversary of my book, Legally Kidnapped, The Case Against Child Protective Services. As always, you can find it at legallykidnapped.net. Thank you very much, and enjoy.
Hello everyone, I'm MK Lords, and I'm known mostly for my work with Bitcoin Not Bombs, and I recently got a job with Airbits as their community manager. A lot of the things I talk about at conferences are related to Bitcoin and activism, and this talk will be nothing like that. It's actually going to get a little bit personal. So today I want to talk about empowerment, because it's been something I've been struggling with my entire life. We look to authority figures and loved ones to protect us, to believe us, and to foster a safe environment for self-expression. But time and time again, we find that individuals in any position of power, even on an interpersonal level, abuse it and break our sense of trust. So people have the will to thrive, and when it's beaten out of us, whether physically or otherwise, we find it hard to form bonds again. My goal with this talk is to let you know that abuses of power can happen to even the most outwardly strong and determined people, and show you what I did to kind of survive what I went through. So a little bit of background. Over the last 4 years, I have worked on a number of unpaid projects obsessively, often with no clear direction of where I was headed. I've thrown myself into my work even when I doubted that it had any larger effect other than personal therapy, and have been incredibly productive seeming from the outside. Despite being a college dropout, I've interviewed prominent people in libertarianism, anarchism, and Bitcoin, been interviewed myself on a number of podcasts and radio programs, written for a variety of publications, organized events with no prior experience, became a public speaker, achieved one of my dreams of becoming a radio host. And also I do performance art too. I'm a dancer and hula hoop artist on the side. I've created content with no media background. And then I've ended up now becoming a community manager at Airbits in one of the most disruptive tech experiments in recent history. I did this all while working a 40-hour a week job at a brokerage firm and being married. Now, while I was doing all this, my marriage was becoming less and less idyllic over time. I got married when I was 19, which is a really bad idea for obvious reasons, but mostly because you don't know yourself at that age, and neither does the person that you're marrying. So over time, things kind of changed. My husband did a 180 in his personality and got extremely religious, and as that got more and more extreme, he became more controlling. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I'm not easily controlled, but love makes you put up with things that you'd never normally allow. Even when our philosophical views were diverging in complete opposite directions, I endured a lot of emotional abuse. And the situation eventually disintegrated into physical violence. And it was then that I realized it was never more important to stand up for your principles than when you were being forcibly silenced. I'm not unique. Thousands of people experience intimate partner violence, and thousands more believe that it will never happen to them. So my point with this talk is to kind of lessen the stigma around this and allow people to open up and be more comfortable talking about these things, because it happens far too often, and it happens to a lot of people too. This isn't something that only happens to weak people or people who are, you know, unintelligent or anything like this. This happens to a wide variety of people. Now, the topic of my talk is For a New Empowerment, How to Protect Yourself from Abusive Partnerships and Subcultures. That's a really wordy title, but I'm going to tie it all in. So how did the two kind of fit together? Well, when I got out of my situation and divorced my husband, I found out that there was a lot of overlap with abusers on the domestic level and then also abusive thought leaders in, you know, larger groups and things like that. So abusers, whether intimate or loosely affiliated, employ the same techniques to control people. These techniques are mirrored in subcultures, the promise of reprieve from invented demons, whether in political, religious, anarchist, or atheist groups. It turns out, cult leaders are a lot like abusive partners. Manipulation can happen in even the most individualized spaces. Liberty-minded places are no exception. Radical niche movements that demonize whole swaths of people basically use the same techniques as abusive partners, and this kind of encourages an unhealthy dependence. Now, what I'll be kind of going off of, some of you may be familiar with the power and control wheel used to educate people about domestic violence, and it breaks down different techniques that abusers use on the emotional, sexual, and physical levels. In this talk, I will primarily focus on the physical and emotional techniques that abusive thought leaders use. And the first spoke that I'll be covering is isolation. Abusers tend to isolate the person they're trying to control. In cults and the like, leaders and followers demonize the outgroup, and then, less pure adherents too, to the philosophy or lifestyle that they espouse. This can come in the form of casting doubt on the motives of those who disagree with the group. It's not enough that it doesn't be wrong, they must also be willingly evil. Does this kind of sound familiar? Over time, this echo chamber can grow and no opposing thought is tolerated. And it can happen very slowly. Maybe the manipulator tends to argue very abrasively with friends or loved ones about specific things and take a very stubborn, absolute stance. And I'm a fairly opinionated person, as Adam pointed out, and I'm not discouraging difficult dialogue, but when it becomes the focus of interactions instead of a byproduct of interactions, then you might want to be concerned. Because when you love or you look up to a person, you allot a certain degree of respect to them. And this respect, while well-deserved, can cloud your judgment. Are they suggesting that you not spend time with heretics? Are they using loaded language to describe those who disagree with you? Now, we all want some kind of tribe, but when our tribe becomes so secluded that we've broken bonds with others who may not share our exact philosophical or theological beliefs, it can cause us to fall into a destructive feedback loop. We crave community and closeness, and this makes it easy to fall into harmful echo chambers. Now, isolation breeds fear, and fear is the center point holding the rest of the spokes together on the power and control wheel. When you're scared, you submit more easily. And direct threats are pretty easy to identify, but indirect threats can be just as terrifying, and these may be done through suggestion, not demand. What is being promised to you by this group or by this leader that you may be a part of? What is being discouraged or restricted? Are enemies being created frequently and swiftly? Is there an implicit promise of apocalypse if you don't do X, Y, and Z? A couple more questions to ask. What role does forgiveness and understanding play in the relationship dynamics, whether you're in a partnership or part of a group? Is there flexibility for innocuous mistakes made by fallible people? Another spoke I want to cover is minimizing, denying, and blaming. Pretty smart people still get caught up in culture subcultures, and when they start realizing these inconsistencies, they often speak up. And I think a lot of people in this room would agree with this. I mean, people can be fairly opinionated, and when you feel that you're in this situation where things aren't quite adding up, where there's some logical inconsistencies, then I think especially anarchists and libertarians are going to be outspoken about that. But when this happens in the context of a relationship or a cultish subculture, when you push back, minimizing, denying, and blaming are often the responses. Now, you can see this in a lot of communities that subtly and not so subtly control their members. A pretty prominent example would be Jim Jones with Jonestown, and a lot of other cult leaders do this. The sad thing about it is many times we find out the depth of control after it's too late. Now, for talented thought leaders, control manifests through clever use of rhetoric and can sound something like this. Quote, it's much better than the old lifestyle you had. You're not being abused. We're not a cult. You can leave at any time. And you're choosing to be here. Now, when domestic abusers use this tactic, it sounds a little bit like this. Quote, it didn't leave a mark. I don't remember that, or that never happened. And my personal favorite, you shouldn't have provoked me. This language shifts the burden to the victim while deflecting attention from the source. I want to emphasize that this can happen in the context of a group situation. It doesn't always come from the top down. It doesn't come from the top person in the hierarchy. A lot of this can be horizontally enforced, because sometimes minimizing, denying, and blaming are responses to being under a degree of control rather than being the locus of control. Another spoke I want to cover is economic abuse. A successful cult can really bring in the bucks. We're often aware of the facade of televangelists who promise us salvation via checkbook. These are the most obvious types of manipulators. But if you can siphon money away from your followers, you can live a pretty comfortable life, and this is something scam artists have done forever. If your thought leader is saying things like, this movement won't succeed without your generous donations, they're using fear to extract economic resources from you. Phrases that demand you sacrifice your income for the greater ideas of liberty, freedom, equality, etc., or salvation, especially, are manipulative. And, you know, that's not to say you aren't free to waste your money doing whatever you want to do, but if you're constantly shamed into donating, if there's all these kind of implicit promises of apocalypse or that something bad is going to happen or that if this movement fails, it'll be the end of the world, then, you know, there may be some kind of controlling intentions. These are just kind of some questions to ask if you feel that you're maybe in this situation. Now, in abusive partnerships, one person may use their economic advantage as leverage in order to control the activity of a lesser advantaged party. And the same is true for abusive subcultures who scoff at demands of transparency and are constantly asking for payments that their followers may or may not be capable of providing. If the thought leader of any movement you're in is hesitant to disclose the methods of funding management or demands money to advance a cause using really hyperbolic phrasing and loaded language, then you know you might want to consider participation. You know, reconsider participation. So, what are some questions to ask if you feel that you're experiencing this spoke? It would be, what is the economic makeup of the participants? How frequent are donations or contributions asked for? What are these funds spent on? And more importantly, am I allowed to know? And what is the amount that is generally encouraged that you donate? Is it above a certain threshold, or does the person asking for donations accept any amount graciously? I want to also make the point here, because I'm not super conspiracy-minded. Not all manipulators are sociopaths. We often have this idea that those who harm others are completely evil, and that's not the case. In fact, true sociopaths make up a very tiny percentage of the population, but unequal power dynamics, whether they be physical, financial, or otherwise, can draw out controlling characteristics in a wide variety of people. And I believe that rehabilitation is possible for people who are not sociopaths but have found themselves harming others. However, survivors may blame themselves for getting into a bad situation because of this possibility of rehabilitation. You see the potential that your partner, or if you're in a group setting, that the greater ideology can be. You see the good in it, and you see that, hey, maybe this isn't where they want to be right now, but they do want to be a better person. And that's what causes us to stay. And The thing is, while this is a possibility, while redemption exists for a huge amount of people, self-preservation should be regarded as higher than the respect we have for those who hurt us, especially if these concerns are brought up and no rehabilitative action is taken or, you know, even attempted. Now, I can't go through all of the spokes. Obviously, there are a lot more spokes on this wheel, and I have limited time. So I want to go into how can you protect yourself if you find yourself in this situation? I want to share some of the tactics that helped me. Now, for the record, this is just my own personal experience. I would recommend that you see a qualified therapist or specialist to deal with these situations, especially if you've experienced extreme abuse. I was not able to afford therapy. These are things that I went through and kind of discovered on my own through a period of very painful self-discovery. So these are just some tips that might help. Again, seek professional help if you need to. One method for protecting yourself is cultivating a healthy sense of self-esteem. I noticed that when my confidence began improving, I became more aware of the toxic situation I was in. And there are a lot of books on this subject. There are a ton of self-help books out there. But something I found particularly helpful was Nathaniel Brandon's The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. The point is, you're not worthless. You have it within yourself to identify and challenge the power disparities you may find yourself in any situation. Something that also helped me was finding my inner voice through writing. And maybe you express yourself through music, art, poetry, blogging, speaking, programming, dancing, etc. Whatever it is, find a hobby, any hobby that inspires your passion, and channel your emotions through it. Creating allows us to process our emotions. A lot of times, and especially in abusive situations, we push down those feelings and suppress them to just survive. It turns out that getting in touch with our emotional side can reveal a lot about our intuitive sense of right and wrong and how we deserve to be treated. Poetry and journaling were especially revealing to me. And you don't have to be a good writer to do this. This is not something that's limited to a small segment of the population who can write clearly and communicate ideas. Just write down what you're feeling in any medium that you find yourself in, and in whatever you have around you. Write it down and go back and look at those notes too. Go back and reread it later. I found out that I had given myself the correct prescription for my situation through writing before I had the gumption to follow through on it. And you can also do things like recording your feelings. If you don't have something around you that you can write on, you can record them through audio or, you know, other means too. Breaking free doesn't always happen immediately. But having a record of your feelings and a chronicle of the events that you're experiencing can bring a lot of clarity. Write it down if you've experienced dissonance or some concern over how an event was handled. And another thing that really helped me is talking with other people who had gone through similar things, or just being open with my friends, for example. Maybe I didn't even realize they were going through a similar situation. It can kind of help you put things in context. A major mistake I made for a really long time was keeping a lot of my struggles to myself out of a respect for my ex-husband's privacy. But we need to be free to be vulnerable. I wasn't healing by hiding my pain, and I've been very fortunate to have found friends who care enough to help with the burden of my own baggage. And again, hearing these can help you contextualize. I remember I was talking with a really good friend of mine who had gone through a situation that was far worse than mine, orders of magnitude worse. But I've realized certain similarities that brought to light the direction things were heading before they got there. And I was able to look back and realize that the situation I found myself in was much more serious than I initially thought. Speaking with these strong women and men who had the strength to escape their situations was very inspiring for me. because life is painful for everyone, and pushing down that pain doesn't help to get you closer to peace. You'd be surprised what others have been through and what they can teach you if you allow yourself to be nakedly honest. I want to also go into meltdowns. When you're under a certain amount of pressure, everyone has their breaking point, and sometimes you're going to be overwhelmed with anxiety and maybe have a panic attack or something like that. And if you're constantly feeling like you're on the edge of losing it or on the edge of a meltdown or breaking down, see if you can identify if that feeling is coming from an internal or external source. Again, this is where keeping your own record really comes in handy. And revisit these records to find attempts at manipulation. One method you may want to use, I found the Trivium method to be very helpful at identifying manipulative ways that people use rhetoric against you. So this is a very good way that you can steel yourself against verbal manipulation. And I think this can be broadened to outside cultish subcultures and partnerships to everyday manipulation. I'll kind of go briefly into that. We're drawn to this kind of radicalism, but often it's a trap. We're surrounded by a lot of kind of crazy clickbaity headlines, and they're all meant to emotionally manipulate us. This is something you can do, you know, even if you're not in these situations. You can identify if manipulation is taking place with hyper-emotional language and things like that, and you can look into the sources, read as much as you can. You know, use Snopes. Snopes that shit. Come on. Read the sources and keep reading, and then keep reading, and read as much as you can, and try to read as many sides of a situation, especially when something tragic occurs. That's when emotional manipulation is at its height, is when some tragedy occurs. And immediately everyone has an opinion the next day. But the thing is, no one knows the truth of what actually happened a day after something tragic has happened. So, be aware of your feelings, and it's okay to let those feelings out, but make sure that you're not maybe immediately jumping to a narrative that is comfortable for you. I think it's a good idea to be a little bit uncomfortable with your views all of the time, because you don't grow unless you realize that you're wrong and you intake new information to correct those positions. So don't fall for clickbait. It's kind of emotional manipulation. And this doesn't mean, I don't want to seem like I'm saying you can't have radical views. In many cases, the radical position is the correct one, but it's important to recognize when this manipulation is occurring in defense of radicalism. When fear is the underlying tone of anything, there's likely some manipulation involved. Now, whether you find yourself in an abusive relationship or swept up in fear-based ideology, it's important to recognize the warning signs, but more importantly, recognize that you are strong enough to get out. There are a lot of resources and support groups out there to help you transition, and oftentimes just talking about this will help draw in the people who can help you and the resources that you need. It's easy to fall into these situations, but by listening to your intuition, finding an outlet for your emotions, and recognizing the patterns manipulators use, you can protect yourself and escape those who would take advantage of your love, dedication, time, resources, and sanity. Because true liberty starts with the expression of your own autonomy and the ability to recognize and the ability to trust in your intuitive ability to identify threats to it. Thank you.